Okay, our next speaker this afternoon is Tony Peterle. He has been involved with radio broadcasting continuously for over 30 years, working in Ohio, Kansas, Hawaii, and Washington State in both on-air and engineering positions. Tony has held a chief engineer position in Kansas City, Wichita, and Honolulu. He spent several years as a traffic pilot in Kansas City, Honolulu, and Seattle, and currently holds a commercial license with instrument and multi-engine ratings, and has amassed over 8,000 hours pilot-in-command time. Tony received the Certified Senior Radio Engineer Certificate from the SBE in 2005 and then came to work for WorldCast Systems, where he now manages sales and support for all of the Americas and enjoys helping customers solve problems, traveling, contributing to the design of new products, and seeing familiar faces at NEB and SBE events. And he loves cheese curds. Tony loves cheese curds twice. So I present to you Tony Peterle. Enjoy.
Thank you very much. Thank you. He forgot my other piece of Wisconsin cred. I learned to do the Bucky from none other than Fred Baumgartner. So I figure that accounts for something. We are talking a little bit today about a subject that has grown near and dear to my heart over the past few years. I've spoken at many of the SBENS workshops and at NAB and other venues about the SNMP, Simple Network Management Protocol. How many of you are familiar with SNMP? A lot more than typical. You guys are on the ball. How many of you are currently using SNMP for management or monitoring of any of your facilities? Far fewer hands, but the possibilities are out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about SNMP. This is not so much an instructional session on, you know, what is SNMP. This is how other broadcasters, other colleagues, you know, our peers are using this protocol to their advantage to be able to do things that they were not able to do prior to embracing this technology. So the questions we're going to answer today is what is it, just the basics, how does it apply to us as broadcast engineers, how are others using it, and if I choose to explore this, what do I do, what are the first steps I do to get started. So we'll start with what is SNMP. SNMP, as I mentioned, is the Simple Network Management Protocol. The word simple, I think, should be in quotes because it's not necessarily a simple thing to understand. It's a computer code, and so it's very sort of syntaxy. It was developed back in the 80s to help the people that were building the infrastructure that we now know as the internet. They needed to be able to look at routers and switches and things all across the country. As these different nodes were linking together and sharing information, they needed to be able to track the progress and control things. So they invented this standardized protocol to retrieve information from distant equipment and also to be able to control that distant equipment. So basic terminologies that we'll need to know, the controlling piece of equipment, the equipment that is issuing the questions, asking the questions, and issuing the orders, that is called a manager, an SNMP manager. It's a piece of software. You can get freeware that does it. You can buy, you know, more expensive options like WhatsUp or HP OpenView. There are a lot of different management softwares that speak this SNMP protocol. So, but whatever it is, whatever the software is that's asking the questions, we call that the manager. The target equipment, the one that is being asked, is called the agent. And the agent has a lot of different data points in it, right? Any piece of equipment can have an SNMP agent software in it, and that piece of software can keep track of and be able to deliver information on hundreds or thousands even of different data points about the operation of that equipment. Each of those data points is called an object, and each object is identified by a unique, singular, numeric identifier that is called the object identifier, or OID. That is what an OID looks like in raw text form. All right, and just real basically, this is like an address of a specific point of data in the equipment. The first four numbers, the 136141, are basically boilerplate. They say this is an ISO number, it belongs to a business, yada, 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 it's a network OID. So those first four numbers are going to be the same in almost every object identifier that you see. The one that follows the first four is the manufacturer ID. So that identifies who made this piece of equipment that that holds this particular data point, this particular object. And then from there on, the manufacturer actually defines the structure of the rest of that object identifier, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But it's basically, it's an address. Points to a specific data point. It would be as if your home address started with the known universe, Milky Way galaxy, solar system, Earth, and got finer and finer resolution from there on out. So that's basically all an OID is, nothing to be scared of. So how do we use it? Well, you have a piece of equipment that is an SNMP manager. Like I say, it could be software, it could be certain facility control equipment also speaks SNMP. So the SNMP can retrieve information from the target equipment by sending a get command, which is apparently not working. Da-da-da-da-da-da. That's back, that's forward. Go, go. Huh, okay. Well, there was some lovely animation on this slide that apparently didn't translate. Anyway, so the manager, the equipment that is the manager, can send a get command to the target equipment and get a piece of data back. And it can also send what is called a set command. So you send a get command to retrieve information. You send a get command that is affiliated with a particular object identifier. And so the manager sends to the agent, says, get me the current value of this object. Here's the object identifier. And the agent software replies, here's the current value of this object. And here again is the object identifier. Now, certain data points you can actually set in that piece of equipment as well with an SNMP set command. And again, it's a simple two-way communication. You send so there's the get command. Now, when the data comes back, of course, depending on the equipment that's receiving the data, you can display it as a meter, you can display it as a numeric value. The value, you can compare it against preset results and get an alarm. The value, the data that comes back from that object doesn't necessarily have to be numeric. Objects, data objects in SNMP can be associated with text values. It could be a text string. It could be an IP address. It could be a floating point number. It could be an integer. It could be another OID. There is a number of different things that could be contained in that data. But regardless of whether it's a get or a set command, I'm going to have to exchange this. Nope. I'm pushing and releasing. I'm getting nothing. All right. That one also. I got a nada. Huh. Okay. All right. So I'll stand for over here. Yay, Tony broke something else. All right. So there's the set command, which you can use, for example, in a Nautel. A lot of their transmitters speak the SNMP protocol, the VS series, the NV series. You can actually turn the transmitter on and off with this SNMP protocol. So once you get that data back, if your system allows it, you can display and use that data in your facility control plan, your overall facility control plan, just like you would any other data that you would collect by any other means. So do we have a third backup? I hear something clicking here, but
yeah,
it's...
that is interesting. The garage door is clicking. Well, just cue me when you want to.
Okay. All right. Now would be good. All right. So you basically, it's just another way to get information from the equipment. Let's go to the next slide, please. Now, when a manufacturer puts a piece of equipment together that supports SNMP, they have all these data points. They assign an object identifier to each one. And then they publish these object identifiers in a text file that's called a MIB, Management Information Base. And when you look at the OID, once you get past the manufacturer number, each of the numbers in the OID corresponds to a different branch of this sort of directory tree. So the manufacturer can organize that data any way they want to, any way they think is appropriate for the piece of equipment. And so some just put everything in one big folder. Some have different subdirectories. For example, this is it from an NEC digital television transmitter. So you can see they have a folder for system control. They have and under that they've got for status, for commands, transmitter status, transmitter commands, etc. In fact, that's if you're looking in a MIB browser, that's an actual object right there, the transmitter on-off control. And this particular MIB browser software puts that little pen nib icon next to the objects that you can write, that you can control. The little leaf is for objects that are read-only. So there are some different categories of objects. All right, next question. We've sort of answered the basics of what is SNMP, so now the next question is, how does it apply to me? And if we go to the next slide, please. So, we can think of it just as another way to connect with and control equipment, to get information from and send commands to another piece of equipment. Just like you would hardwire your regular I/O, your analog voltages, your contact closures, status indicators, and things like that, or with some equipment, there's RS-232 protocols, serial protocols. You can communicate between your facility control device and the transmitter. The Harris Z Platinum Series FM, real popular RS-232 interface. A lot of people using that to talk to the transmitters because you get much greater depth of information and a lot less time spent wiring. So now if we click again, SNMP lets you do that over a network connection. So it's just another way to connect with and control equipment. The key difference is, that's a network. That could be anywhere in the world. So the scope of what we're able to talk to, the barriers of physicality and distance sort of disappear when you start to explore this protocol. The equipment that you're controlling and monitoring could be adjacent to your control gear. It could be in the next room, the next building, another city, or in another continent. Could be anywhere. If you can see it over the network, you can control it with SNMP. So lots of things speak SNMP. Of course, we talked about broadcast, the Nautel, also, of course, IT. That's what SNMP was developed for. So all routers, switches, firewalls, servers, all your IT infrastructure. And I'm not going to ask for the show of hands is, you know, how critical is IT infrastructure to broadcasters today, and how few broadcasters are really actively monitoring their IT infrastructure. It's key. TV guys seem to glom onto it more because they have bandwidths and data rates. You know, they're relying a lot more heavily. They got into the IT stuff a lot earlier and a lot harder than the radio guys did. But, you know, it's important to keep an eye on those systems just as much as your transmitter or your AC or anything else that is involved with your station. UPS systems, HVAC systems, security systems, IP microwave links, almost anything with a network port speaks SNMP. So the library of equipment that we can connect with and control isn't limited anymore to the things that have screw terminals that we can actually put a pair of wires on and monitor a voltage. So the possibilities are enormous. And in our own product line, of course, we have monitors and our audio codecs and our facility control gear speaks SNMP. Interesting point, though, the facility control gear speaks SNMP both as a manager and as an agent. So not only can this facility control gear issue commands and get information from other stuff using SNMP, it can also be pulled for all of the information that it has from its analog inputs and status closures and anything else that's wired up to it. All of that is available from SNMP to share with another unit. So this makes site-to-site communications really interesting. And we'll show a practical example of that here in just a second. So you can have one site sharing data with another site, each of those sites. So if you have multiple sites scattered across a market, it's very easy over the network to share information, to share controls, and even automate actions between sites. And that's something that was virtually impossible 5 or 6 years ago with the remote control systems that we had available. There's almost no way to do that. So let's go ahead and click one more and find out how others are using. We'll start out with a prime example. So we're talking, these are the people that we talked to. Steve Frick didn't manage to get a picture into me, but we're talking about Josh Haddon in Clear Channel in New York, Doug Irwin, who's a Clear Channel now in Los Angeles, Gary Schultz, WLS-TV in Chicago, and Brett Gilbert from Clear Channel in Tulsa. Each of these users of, you know, various size markets, all, you know, very talented, intelligent people, but maybe different size budgets, different size staffs. So let's find out how they're using it. Josh is a real good example. Critical media market. I mean, New York City, he's chief engineer for Clear Channel. He has got a lot on his plate. These are Josh's responsibilities. Now, of course, he has a team to help him with this, but he's responsible for their main transmitter site at Empire State Building, their backup site at Four Times Square, security systems. He's got, they put on his plate control of the key card access. So he has to monitor and control the systems that control who gets access to which floors in the elevators and who can open which doors with the key cards. He's got to keep track of all that stuff too. All their studios, all their telecommunications and IT, the HVAC, their master control, generator systems at all their facilities, and of course they've got a complete backup facility across the river in New Jersey where they duplicated all their studios and things as a disaster recovery. So prior to embracing the SNMP technology and making this work for him, these are the things that Josh had to do and his team had to do to change operations from their main transmitter site to their backup, from Empire to Four Times Square. They got four stations. And for each one of them, they would have to go through this rigmarole just to move operations from one site to the other. And they have to do that more often than you would think. OSHA regulations, if anybody's working on the outside of the building, everybody's got to shut down. There was a time when the AC system at the top of Empire State Building actually couldn't cope with the sunlight. On certain days of the year, the sun would hit the louvers at the top of the building at a certain angle, and it would actually overheat the transmitter hut. The AC couldn't keep up with it. So they knew it was coming, but they had to actually move all of their operations, and that's what they had to do. So Josh incorporated SNMP and this facility control gear into his site. So now his Empire site and his Four Times Square site are talking back and forth to each other more or less constantly. Every few seconds, they're pinging messages back and forth, just making sure everything's okay. And of course, he's got his control point. So now, when Josh wants to change operations from one site to the other, that's all he has to do. Connect to one of his control units. It can be any one of these he can connect to. Select which station or stations, plural, he wants to switch and hit the go button. And then the system, with the SNMP communications and the intelligence and the software, does all of this for him, which makes the workload easier, and that's something we could all use a little bit more of. More things to take care of and fewer man hours to do it. So we're gonna have to click through a couple here. This is a view of one of his remote control pages. We're looking at the Empire State Building site. This is the main page, view page for the Z100 transmitter at Empire State Building. You've got his forward power, his transmitter on-off controls, all that kind of stuff. So you can see the arrow is going to show you, if the arrow shows up, there it is. So that shows you the main page. And then down to the bottom, go ahead and hit it again. There's a little set of meters and controls for that same station at the other site. So on the one connecting to one piece of equipment, looking at one view, he's actually able to see information and control transmitters at both Empire State Building and Four Times Square. So if he wants to switch operations, basically all he has to do is click one off and click the other one on. And it can even do that automatically for him. Now here's some information that he's getting from SNMP from his Liebert HVAC system. So he's able to monitor temperatures, change set points, monitor condensation pans, all that kind of stuff that he wasn't able to do before because it didn't have a way to connect to him. Something else that got written in, Doug did this before he left New York City to go to the Clear Channel in Los Angeles. He built in what he called the Doomsday Script. So part of these communications that's going back and forth between Empire State Building and Four Times Square was a little subroutine that if the Empire transmitter for any of their stations got knocked off the air and could not be restarted, it would automatically fire up that station's transmitter at Four Times Square to keep them on the air. And wouldn't you know it, Friday afternoon, September 9th, 2012, it paid off. This is the email I got from Doug. Since the last Friday afternoon at 3:40 p.m., I got an email and a phone call from one of our reliables. I interpreted its messages somewhat incredulously. Turns out the Z100 transmitter at Empire State Building got knocked off the air. Some water had leaked from the ceiling above the transmitter and killed it. The auto site switch script that was running between the two sites did its thing, restored operations from the Four Times Square site. And the key thing, no one here aside from engineering even knew what had happened. So there's a nice practical and very useful use for the SNMP protocol right there. Real world number two, Gary Schultz, WLS-TV in Chicago, while we're talking about the top of tall buildings. He says that the SNMP has really opened up a new world of remote control for them. They have a Harris Platinum, I think, and a Diamond ATSC transmitter, both of which speak SNMP. So through SNMP, Gary says he can actually tailor his system exactly the way he wants it. So we can see, we'll cycle through a few here, some of these views here. On each of these pages, probably 90 to 95% on each of these pages, there's maybe one or two pieces of information or controls that are not obtained through SNMP. They're obtained through traditional hardwired connections or some other means. But most all of this is SNMP. From all of its transmitters, all the status indications, all the controls, all the readings, all coming in through SNMP. And he also sent me this little email. He did a procedure called grid scrubbing. After the procedure, you have to ramp up the power on the tube slowly over a period of 4 or 5 hours. And he said normally this would entail him running from his desk across to the other room and pushing the, you know, pushing the buttons on the transmitter. They don't have the controls for the small power raise, power lowers that he wanted to do. He couldn't get at those through hardwire, but with SNMP, he was able to add those individual power adjustments into his remote control script, and then he could do this whole procedure, this ramp-up procedure on the power from his desk, which, as you can see, has a really nice view. Why would you want to leave that desk? All right, so there's a little bit more of the information that Gary is getting from his transmitters. A couple of other things at the site that he's controlling with SNMP, but they're very happy with that capability. So, Brett Gilbert, Clear Channel in Tulsa, Steve Frick, also a Clear Channelist, he's in San Diego, doing similar things, just sharing information. They're not as advanced as the guys in New York with the automatic site switching and all that kind of stuff, but little by little, they're exploring the capabilities of SNMP and finding out what it can do for them. And what it can do is it can coalesce. It can bring all of the information from many different sites together in one spot. Brett says he likes the ability to view other equipment without point-to-point wiring, and the ability to have a single-page view of all of their transmitter sites so they could see at a glance the status of their entire operation in Tulsa. And you can see that view here. Basically, he's got his main and auxiliary transmitter power readings. I believe this is 4 or 5 different physical sites in Tulsa that they have there scattered across, but it's several different sites. He's able to pull together all of that information because he can query one site from another site with SNMP and get all the readings in that he needs. Steve Frick in San Diego, similar thing, different presentation graphically, but again, across multiple sites, he's got their 7 stations here. All of their information as far as operating temperatures and the forward and reflected powers and whatnot are all showing up in one page because he can use SNMP to communicate from site to site. That makes it easy for him. All right, so next question. How do I get started? What do we do if we want to explore this this protocol? Well, first thing you're going to have to do is learn a little bit, and you're doing some of that right now. The second thing you're going to need to do is get a couple of pieces of software. And don't worry, they're free. The software tools that you're going to need are an advanced text editor. Regular old Notepad won't do it, and we'll show you why here in a second. And then the other really useful piece is called a MIB browser. Think of it as a web browser, except this is for SNMP and MIBs and OIDs and all that kind of stuff. Next step for you to do would be maybe to identify some target equipment in your site, some things that you think might speak SNMP. Again, you can target HVAC systems, UPS systems, any IT infrastructure, things like that, servers, printers. You have to get up into kind of the upper level professional pro-grade printers, the typical Epson and Canon stuff that you buy at Office Depot. Maybe it's not going to speak SNMP, but you know, one of those big Xerox monsters, it's the size of a Volkswagen, yeah, probably will. And you know, why not? If you can monitor the level of the toner in the office printer and send an email to the office manager saying, you're getting a little low on cyan, you want to make sure you have some on hand. Whether it's going to help keep the station on the air or not, who knows, but it reinforces that image of omniscience, right? I'm the engineer, I know all. I can tell you what's going to fail before it happens. All right, so the advanced text editor, Notepad++ is the one that I've used, if you haven't got it already, and I'll show you why it's an important thing. Some MIB files are not formatted for a standard text editor. All right, we'll show you 2 MIB files here. It is a text file. You can look at it in any text editor, a MIB file. So let's take a look at the first example here. This is from a Toshiba UPS system, and you can see Right at the beginning of the MIB file, you'll see this at the beginning of almost every MIB file, the imports. So this is a shortcut that manufacturers use so that they do not have to define all of these things in their MIB. So you can borrow the definitions of a timestamp and a time interval and what is an enterprise and what is an object type. You can borrow that from these other kind of industry standard MIBs, these RFCs. So almost every MIB file will start or have this imports operation, this imports function, somewhere very near the beginning of the MIB file. So if we look at that, the Toshiba MIB in a standard text editor, that doesn't look bad at all. We can read that, we can understand that. Now, let's take a look at another one. It's Divicom Europa. It's some kind of video transcoder or whatever. I was just poking around looking for MIB files, and I found this one. It's like, all right, well, that's a piece of broadcast gear. Let's take a look at the MIB file. So what happens when you look at this MIB file in a standard text editor? Find the imports. They're there. Hit it one more time. Up. There they are, imports. So if we look at that same text file in Notepad++, we're going to see a little different picture. So that's why Notepad++. It's freeware. Grab it. Useful stuff. Okay, the other thing you're going to need, these were very helpful books for me, so I'm going to recommend a couple of books and a couple of websites. If you want to explore the SNMP protocol, the Essential SNMP by Mauro and Schmidt. It's the one with deer on the cover. I don't know why. What does that have to do? But apparently that's what O'Reilly does. They put some kind of wildlife on the cover of every technical book. So that's a good one. The other one that I got a lot out of in terms of the MIB structure themselves is understanding SNMP MIBs. That's Perkins and McGinnis. That's Prentice Hall Press. The first one is still in print, the second one's out of print, you can still find copies of it, but if you want to look at less expensive options, there are a couple of excellent websites. DPS Telecom, they're a company that does industrial monitoring and control systems, so they're heavy into SNMP and have been for a long time, and they've got an excellent website, dpstele.com. It's full of white papers and all kinds of information, little tools and tips and practical applications for SNMP. That's a little bit of what their website looks like, so that's not a bad one to check out. And then there is also a .org, net-snmp.org. Also has some tutorials, some testing software, basic descriptions of MIB files and OIDs and all that kind of stuff and how that works. That's what their website looks like. So those are some resources you can do to kind of expand your knowledge when you get into it. And start getting a little bit deeper into what exactly is the structure of the MIB file and why does it work the way it does, why is it laid out the way it is. But let's say you're not that kind of guy. You're not the kind of guy that reads the manual first. We don't know anybody like that, do we? So what if you want to just dive right into it? Well, you get a MIB browser. The usefulness of the MIB browser is you can look at the MIB tree. You get to see it in that kind of directory tree structure, which helps you find the areas of information that you need. Now, that can be not so easy in some MIB files because some of them are very long. You can also look at the individual OIDs, and with the MIB browser, you can actually test an OID. You can load a MIB file for a piece of equipment into a MIB browser. You put the IP address of the target equipment, right, the one that you got the MIB file for, and then you can actually send get and set commands from the MIB browser. So you can see the information coming back. You can, see how your controls work, see what you have to do to turn something on and off or to change a setting. So it's good for just kind of testing and poking around and that kind of stuff. There's also an operation the MIB browser can do called a walk, which will basically go through an entire MIB file or a section of a MIB file and bring you back the value of every object from the piece of equipment, from the target piece of equipment. Walking a MIB file may or may not be a good thing to do. We'll show you why. So the MIB browser that I use, that everybody I know uses, iReasoning.com. So you can just go to iReasoning.com. There's a link on there for MIB browser. Or you can just copy this whole URL, click it in there, download it. It's, again, free of charge for non-commercial use, which if you're educating yourself is exactly what you're doing. So that's a very excellent MIB browser. So let's take a look at what a MIB browser looks like. So this is the iReasoning MIB browser. We have loaded a MIB file. There's controls up here to let you load a MIB file. You can see the directory tree with these objects in it. All of those are read-write objects. When you select an object there, it shows you the description, the name of the object, the OID, what MIB file it came from, the syntax of the object. This particular one, transmitter on and off, is an integer. If you want to turn the transmitter off, you send a set command with a value of 1. If you want to turn the transmitter on, you send a set command with a value of 2. Why they did 1 and 2 as opposed to 0 and 1, who knows? It's up to them. All right, so then when you select that, you can see the OID would appear up here, and then you could put the IP address of the target equipment there, and then you can send a get command or a set command, whatever you want, to try and test the information. So the MIB browser can do some very useful things, really essential tool if you're going to start exploring SNMP. It can give you that window into the SNMP files. You can look through the MIBs. You can find the OIDs. You can examine the structure of the MIB. You can test your get and set commands. You can do a walk. What a MIB browser cannot do is automatically do any of this. MIB browser is just it's like a magnifying glass. It lets you, look at stuff and maybe poke it with your finger. But if you're not holding the eyeglass and doing the poking yourself, it's not going to do it on its own. So it's not going to automatically pull your equipment for you. It's not going to keep track of things and alert you when something gets out of tolerance. It's not going to be able to integrate any readings or data from contact closures or analog voltages or any of that. It's just an exploratory tool, really, is all the MIB browser is. All right? So let's show you the MIB browser in use with a real live piece of broadcast gear. So the Nautel NV transmitter, SNMP ready. They had a software update a couple of years ago. Their SNMP agent software in the original NVs was very slow. But when people started actually using SNMP to try and talk to these transmitters, Nautel did a great job. They rewrote their software and came up with a faster MIB agent, faster SNMP agent for the NV series. It actually has two MIB files. There's one sort of general Nautel MIB that has some general definitions and things, and then there's an NV MIB. There's an NV-specific MIB for that specific line of transmitter. So Nautel was kind enough to put one of these online for me when we were developing our interface for the NV series, and let me play with it. They put one online in Quincy and hooked it up to a dummy load and said, go. So I got the MIB file. It's a very easy MIB. It's a very simple layout. There some MIBs can be tabular in structure where you have data points arranged in columns and rows. And boy, it starts getting real confusing because then you have to start adding numbers to the end of the object identifier to get to the actual object you want. You'll have one OID that says, all right, the object is in this table, and then you have to say dot column, dot row. That's the exact data point I want. So tabular MIBs are difficult to navigate. They're challenging. The Nautel NV MIB, no tables, there are no alarm traps in there. Very simple. There's one group of data for the controller, one group for the active exciter. Very straightforward and easy to control. So let's see what happens. These are actual screenshots I took from my office in Miami as I'm pinging this transmitter in Quincy and trying to see what kind of information I can get from it. So let's go ahead to the next slide. So we're going to try and get a single OID. So I browse through the MIB file and I find this NV controller total RMS forward power meter. That sounds like a useful piece of information. So let's get a little bit more about that. So there's the name of the object, and there's the OID. So you can see that Nautel's manufacturer number is 28142. You can see that it reads in thousandths, and it's a read only. You can't set the power level this way. You can only read it. This is just a meter. It's current, which means it's refreshed totally. So that looks like a useful object. So let's go ahead and put that into the MIB browser. So we click on it, and you can see it in the MIB browser there. I put the IP address of the transmitter in. I hit the get command, hit the go button, and came up with nothing. Well, is that a result? Why would it say zero? I don't understand that. Well, duh, I forgot to turn the transmitter on first. So let's wander back through the MIB file. We found the read-write, see the little pen icon? We found the read-write object, NV controller RF on off state. Hey, that sounds pretty useful too. It's an integer. And unlike NEC, off is zero, on is one. I can handle that. So we click on that. We see that object identifier come up in the OID. We do a set command, and then the MIB browser is going to ask you, what kind of data are you setting? Is it a text string? Is it an integer? Is it a floating point number? What are you sending? So you say, all right, I'm sending an integer. I'm sending a value of 1. Click on OK. And then I do a power meter reading again, and I see 512. 512. Well, that's what it should read. That's what the actual interface of the transmitter itself directly through a web browser read. So half a kilowatt, 500 watts. So that's just a quick example. It's like click, 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 and I was able to turn a transmitter on half a country away and confirm that I had turned the transmitter on by getting a power reading. And that's all over public internet from my office in Miami using SNMP. It's powerful stuff. All right, so the Nautel NV, that MIB is a great one to walk through. You'll see when you get the MIB files, you'll see if the file size is fairly small, you can pop that in. You can see a very nice logical structure. You can do a walk, and if you do a walk command on the Nautel, it's basically going to pull every object it finds in every subfolder of the MIB. So you can see there's your plus 5 meter, your plus 15 meter, there's your plus 12 meter ambient temperature, there's VSWR meters, there's all kinds of stuff. So all of that comes through in probably less than 8 seconds, all of that data. And that was, again, from half a country away. So a walk information, if the MIB is small enough, you can do a walk information, really get a lot of useful information in a short amount of time. A little more detail on some of the meters that we were seeing. So I tried to do this with another piece of equipment. This is a Fibair or Saragon Fibair IP link, a little simple microwave IP link. I thought to myself, well, it's an easy device. It should have a pretty easy MIB file, right? No. The MIB file on this thing is 288 pages of text. Talk about information overload. So there's no way you're going to put that into any kind of a text editor and find useful information. You may be able to search for certain key phrases, but if they're not using common terminology, you're lost. So this is a place where the MIB browser is going to come to the rescue, because you can put that MIB file in it, you can see the structure, you can see the different subfolders, and you can determine, you know, more quickly determine where is the data that you're trying to get to. So the MIB browser is absolutely essential. So the advantages of using SNMP in your facility control plan, obviously you're going to save a lot of time. You know, you can plug in one network cable and load a MIB file and have access to hundreds or even thousands of parameters, may even be tens of thousands of parameters in that fiber. So there's a lot more information. You get a greater detail of information. They can catch small problems before they become big problems. You get to do all that without doing a lot of point-to-point wiring. You can monitor and even control your vital IT systems and keep track of that whole infrastructure that keeps the station humming. That's critical stuff. You can monitor and control the broadcast equipment that's currently supporting SNMP. We set up an example demo for a customer last week, and we've got a lot of other customers doing this that are pulling RF monitoring data from the Golden Eagle HD using SNMP, because the Golden Eagle HD is an SNMP agent. So if you want to get RF level, modulation levels, any of that stuff that you would get from the, you know, off-air reception, maybe stuff that wouldn't necessarily be available from connecting to the transmitter, you know, because you're actually reading off the air, so you're reading it with the effects of the antenna and everything else involved. So you can pull those with SNMP and display them in a Relio or something else and integrate that more into the overall facility control plan. You can also monitor other stuff, IT systems, UPS, security systems, lots of detail of information, and monitor and control things from anywhere that you can reach with a network address. All right, that's what we call doing more with less. And that's kind of what it's all about. Isn't that what we're all trying to do? Accomplish more with the fewer resources that we have. So I'm going to take questions. Questions on SNMP? Yeah, right here.
We have to open up ports to the router, and what about security?
Correct. Both very excellent questions. SNMP uses ports 161 and 162. Those are standard industry, so you'll generally find those open already on most of your routers and your firewalls and things like that. He also asked about security, which is a good a very good point, and it's one that gets raised every time I give this talk. SNMP is essentially not secure. It's not inherently secure. It is a simple text protocol. If you're sending it over open internet, you're doing it at your own risk. Somebody could conceivably sniff out the messages and suss out what it is that you're talking to and maybe mess with your flow. So basic network precautions: have a VPN, have the network itself secure from unauthorized access. You can also consider using the SNMP protocol V3. There are three different SNMP protocol versions. V1 and V2C are by far the most common. But if the target equipment supports SNMP V3, SNMP V3 is encrypted and also adds a second layer, an additional layer of password protection that V1 and V2C do not have. So our gear speaks SNMP V3 as a manager. I'm pretty sure it would speak it as an agent as well. I'm not positive on that point. In general, we've not heard of any hacking incidents, but it's, you know, of course, always a concern, especially if you're doing things over a distant, you know, internet kind of a connection. All right, other questions? All right, not necessarily about SNMP, about anything else, any of the WorldCast programs, products, APT codecs. De nada. All right, well, I'm here all week. Try the veal, tip your waitresses, and if you want to come visit us in the hall, into the hall, we're on the right wall, booth 60, WorldCast Systems. Appreciate your time. Thank you very much.